from the church. But the church would have been nowhere if he had said that I am real in a world of phantoms. So that was the difficulty before him. So it was half-hearted philosophy of Berkeley. And that is why he thought it wise enough to cut down matter altogether. Unperceived matter is abracadabra, he says. Unperceived matter. If you don't perceive, God at least perceives. How do you know that? He has no answer. So similarly, Berkeley has necessarily, he was obliged in the circumstances he was placed to have God by the hind door, not by the front door, but by the hind door. So Berkeley too makes a sort of concession to the church. Well, then let the God be the after all. God be the creator of finite beings and things in the world. So Berkeley is only half-hearted, like Thomas Aquinas. And he is torn between two horns of the dilemma, and he just manages to go through the dilemma by avoiding the two horns, by cancelling matter. Hume was more honest, and we can say more talented than all Berkeley and Locke. And therefore he said, if matter goes away, mind also goes away, by the parity of reasoning. And if mind goes away, then God, who is just created by your imagination, he also goes away. And if God goes away, the dreams of immortality and freedom also go away. So there was absolute ruin with you. So I can say, if I want to say anything about philosophy, so far as the Western philosophy is concerned, I will share with you rather than with any of these people. Because on account of your search for truth, Hume has made a careful search of truth, and he has said that all the philosophies before him will end nothing but in skepticism. Who is there to challenge it? And there was none except Kant. Had not Kant been there, Hume would have been the last one to this day. Had not Kant been born, then Hume would have been the last bird in philosophy. And there would have been no chairs of philosophy in India or anywhere. Skepticism everywhere. So, but Kant came and said, you are fighting unnecessarily. That there is an element of reason on the one hand, and there is an element of sensibility on the other hand. And sense and reason must be together, otherwise there will be no knowledge. And the sensible element comes from the thing in itself, and the rational element comes from mind and the category that understand. And he said that there will be knowledge. And if there is knowledge, then there will be knowledge of all things, including God. Not in the pure, in the critique of pure reason, but in the third book, or the second book, and the third book only. But Kant has moved step by step, cautiously, you see. But there is a great mistake in Kant. And what is it? That he has made, no doubt, very boldly, he has come to the precipices of a great problem. But unfortunately, he has failed. What is that failure? He has made the thing in itself a counterpart of the self. He has made the thing in itself as a counterpart of the self. By what? By a sort of artificial contrivance. By a sort of bringing in the marriage between sense and reason. By artificial contrivance of the marriage between sense and reason, can you establish that which you wish to have? How is self existing there? It is in Kantian philosophy, the unity of apperception of the self is nothing but a logical principle. It is not an entity. It has been assumed. Will then assumption be a reality? He is compelled to have a focus that the unity of apperception. The unity of apperception gathers all the threads, and it is made into a sort of veni, or you can say they all are collected there. All the threads are collected there in one point. So unity of perception is not a metaphysical fact. It is a logical fact. So that is an error. He has not proved that it is self exists. He has proved that self is necessary. You see. So that is a great defect of Kant. And Fichte, he did not know He just is at the bottom. He could not understand Kant. And he has made the mistake as a reality. He has started with as if the mistake of Kant, namely the logical, as the metaphysical. He has said that the self is real. Kant has not proved that it is real. Kant has proved that it is a necessity that I am having in the unity of a perception for the logical purpose, for the epistemological purpose. He has not proved this unity of a perception as a metaphysical fact. And therefore, he could not go in the, what is going to be, the critique of pure reason from logic to metaphysics. That was left from some raw persons. Fichte, for example, has done it. He has considered as if the logical necessity as if a metaphysical certainty. Why should this is the initial mistake. Not initial mistake of Fichte is that he considered the logical necessity of Kant into a metaphysical certainty. And he took for granted that the self is real. He started with that. And had what? A shadow of it, namely the not self. And the shadow was an obstacle to him. Nature was an obstacle to Fichte. Nature was not an obstacle. Nature was subservient. It's not an obstacle. Servant is not necessarily an obstacle, but servant is a helpful mate to you. He is a helper. So nature is helper. He made it an obstacle. And because you have to go against the obstacle, his theory is known as an ethical theory. Because in ethics you have to overcome the temptations. And he thought that we shall have ethical idealism by overcoming the obstacle of nature. He made a wrong initial start, namely of confusing the logical with the metaphysical, and created a shadow of that self into a not-self, considered the not-self as a hurdle in his way, and said that the ideal of all human beings is a moral progress to overcome the temptations. This was the failure of a Fichte. Upon this failure, again, Schelling wants to build something else. If you have no foundation, if you have a foundation of science, how can you bring heaven's structure? All the upper stories will come down immediately. So Schelling also had failed. Why? Because that shadow he considered to be a reality. And the self is to imitate that shadow. How fantastic it is that he considers art as supreme. At least Fichte was good in saying that the end of human life is in a moral struggle. But this man created art, and Plato has long ago said that art, you see, if it is sensuous art, will not raise the dignity of man, but bring him down. Even today, if music, for example, music can be in a hall, like great men, but music also in a company of the prostitute, what will it be? If the music does not lead you to God, music will degenerate you. Art of a beautiful woman, no doubt, but if you have it a naked woman, then what is the use of that art? Is it not art? It is an art. But Schelling says that the highest function of man is to have art, to artistic. Art is a double-edged sword. It will lead you to God, no doubt, but it will lead you to hell also. So that was the mistake of Schelling. He didn't understand that art is a double-edged sword. That was the mistake of Schelling. And finally Hegel comes on the shoulders of this Fichte and Schelling and says it is absolute, the logical reality. He doesn't make any distinction between logic and metaphysics. He says the laws of logic are the laws of metaphysics. True in a sense, it is true. I cannot think of a wall being whitewashed, and I cannot think of a wall being not whitewashed. Why? Because it is a necessity of thought. It is a necessity of thought. I cannot think of the wall in front of me as whitewashed and not whitewashed, because it is impossible for the being of the wall to be whitewashed and not whitewashed at the same time. You see, the logical law is at the same time a metaphysical law. That is a good point in Hegel, no doubt. The laws of thought are the laws of reality. There is no distinction between rational and the real. That is true. But in that case, will every rational thing will be real? And then another great mistake which Hegel has made as the thesis and the antithesis. Is there any divergence between the two? Is the antithesis, should it not be real? Antithesis, to be or not to be was the problem before Hamlet. Then was he not in a fix? Was he not to be was an antithesis of to be? You know Hamlet. And in every man's life this comes, a puzzle comes. What shall I do? A difficulty is there. Then you have the two points before you actually present. You are in the two waters, hot and cold. They are there. Life is complex. Life goes beyond logic. Logic is a basal science, according to Hegel. It should not be. Psychology should be. Psychology goes far beyond logic. Actual life goes beyond logic, you see. Metaphysics goes beyond logic. Logic gives you only thought as a prior element. But if the sensible element is not there at all, what has that logic to do? That is why the Aristotelian logic, for example, came into disrepute. And the inductive logic, novum argum with Bacon started, observation experiment. What will you observe? And what will the material upon which you have experiments? If there is no material thing at all, if there is no sensibility at all. But he says there is thesis, there is antithesis, and there is the synthesis. And will not synthesis again be thesis for a new dialectical process? That's new synthesis. And then there will be antithesis, and then there will, how long will it be? There will be the regression at infinitum, anavastha, you see, in Hegel. And fundamentally it is wrong that antithesis is the opposite of thesis. If the antithesis is opposite of thesis, is not thesis opposite of antithesis? Why should you have antithesis first and antithesis afterwards? Why should you not have antithesis first and thesis afterwards? It just works the same way. You see, antithesis first and thesis afterwards. Thesis is the counterpart, opposite of antithesis. It is not. If the seed is first and the tree afterwards, who has shown it? It is a circular movement. You can't have seed without the tree and the tree without the seed. Which is first? Nobody can solve this problem. Similarly, why should he say dogmatically that the thesis is first and the antithesis afterwards? Why should he not say that the antithesis is first and the thesis afterwards? So Hegel also is arbitrary. And that this arbitrariness will not do in philosophy at least. Philosophy is a straight wicket. You go on, you don't be afraid of truth. You see, let untruth be there. You embrace it as you embrace the truth. That is philosophy. You don't shirk your responsibility. Aristotle has said, I have, you can say, respect for my master, but I have greater respect for truth. Aristotle said this about Plato. I have respect for Plato, but I have greater respect for truth. Such should be the attitude of a philosopher. And Hegel is one of the greatest philosophers. And he says that the thesis is first because you like it. And the antithesis after because you do not like it. Why should not there be tree first and the seed afterwards? Why should be the seed first and the tree afterwards? Because you find that you sow the seed and then have a tree. Because this is the common sense. Why? The seeds are not there without the tree. You see. Similarly again, the parts and the whole. What is parts and the whole? It is an organism. And you find even in an organism, now the parts are here. The parts can be replaced. Which is more? If suppose all the parts of the staple are taken away, which is, can they be whole at all? No possible. So the parts are more real than the whole. But in the case of the tree, for example, you cut the branches and yet the organism, the tree, the whole is there and the parts are not there. Now this is arbitrary. This we see there. And if you cling only to the parts are more real than the whole, or another man says the whole is more real than the parts, then they are only emphasizing different aspects of one and the same thing. The parts. And the third man will come forward. No, the parts are equally real than as the whole. Why? No, in a society, for example, as I pointed out yesterday, that the individuals may come and go, the society remains. You see. Jodhpur may lose, all its members, all the citizens will disappear, and yet the Jodhpur will remain. You see. This institution, SMK College or Jeswant College or the university will remain. If all the professors die, what will the university will also die along with them. The whole is moving. Not in the least, they are perishable. So, neither the category of the parts nor that of the whole is an adequate explanation of the reality. You see. So, Hegel has not made anything regarding this. has arbitrarily dated the thesis first and the antithesis afterwards and the synthesis afterwards. But everywhere it is not the same. Everywhere, no, it's not the same. One man's food is another man's poison. That we have said. Whether the poison is first or the food is first. What will you say? Poison is first, one man's food is poison. Oh, this is my food. Non-vegetarian and vegetarian. He says, this is the excellent, this contains protein, and you don't contain protein. I do not require protein at all. You see, a serpent lives only on milk, a serpent lives only on air. You see, what of that? So, we should not be, you can say, clamorous and about certain things and insist upon that this is the thesis and this is the antithesis. You can't say about it. The thesis is as good as the antithesis of the antithesis which is thesis. And the best example of it is between the tree and the tree. So Hegel is only arbitrarily saying what he wants to say. That will not satisfy us. Should not satisfy. And it does not satisfy me. Therefore, Hegel also is wrong. And then after Hegel, then come again in the same line, what Bradley and Bosanquet. Bradley makes the law of contradiction as the supreme. He bases his philosophy on the law of contradiction. I am just summarizing, by the way, what I have done in the five lectures also. You see, that the law of contradiction is supreme. Why is the law of contradiction supreme? As I pointed out, to be or not to be are they? Yes, they exist at the same time. I love and do not love. It exists at the same time. Somebody asked me, by way of a joke, say, what will you do if Rambha and Urvashi and all of them come and meet you? You see, and you may have a Triloka Sundari, for example, as your beloved. Whom will you prize more? I shall say, they are the Svaragangana, they are the harlots of heaven. My beloved is Triloka Sundari, he is there in heaven. She is the universe, she is the beauty of the universe. And these are Svaragangana. Brahmadeva has his Brahmani, Indra has his Indrani, Vishnu has his Lakshmi, Shankara has his Parvati, and what are these Anganas? They are nothing but harlots and prostitutes of the heaven. They can dance only in the court of Indra, that's all. Nothing more than that, and they shall please any man they like, they come across. This is an instance that they are not harlots. Indra has sent one Urvashi into this world to tempt Arjuna. And she says, in Marathi it is, Arjuna alare to the Pashi Ramavaya Vasave Thadile Majasi. She says to Arjuna, Arjuna means, literally means a straightforward man, a truthful man. He says to him, Arjuna was not exactly, satisfied with one woman. He wanted many. He went to the Nagakanya and held Urupi. He then, Ghatotkacha, whose mother also was his wife, and Draupadi was there, and several persons, innumerable, you see, polygamy she was. There were no such thing as one woman and one wife. In theory, he was not a theorist too simply, he was a practical man, and therefore he believed as many women as can be possible. But so far as this Rambha and Rubashi, somebody came from Indra and wanted to tempt, he was the son of Indra probably, as the Purana says, whatever it may be, but Arjuna, Indra had sent that heavenly harlot to Arjuna and said, get out, fool, go to your heaven and dance there, don't come to me. That was the courage which Arjuna has shown. They are after all the Devangana. They are not of this. So I said, what of that? If I prize the Triloka Sundari as the only she in my world, then I care a fig for other persons. If I love somebody, I must hate it. I once told a friend of mine here, I believe Professor Vyas, that if you cannot hate, you cannot love. That was. How can you say you love all persons in the world? So they are antithetical, and that must be there in every man. If there is love at first sight, there is prejudice at love sight. Why do we not? Do we all meet and embrace all the persons on the street? You don't do this. Why do you not? You are indifferent to some, you have prejudice against some, you have hatred against some, and you have love against some. So that is the natural course of things. So he speaks of a concrete universal and based upon the law of contradiction. It is altogether false. There cannot be a concrete universal. Unmixed, homogeneous, it will be heterogeneous. It will be of truth, of good, bad and indifferent. The world is constituted of this. If you shut your eyes and create something in imagination, Bradley has considered appearance and reality. Is goodness also an appearance? I ask the Bradleyan student. Is goodness also an appearance? As good an appearance as badness? What will it say? There will be a difference of degree. What will be? In course of time, will badness be equal to the goodness, or goodness will degenerate to badness? Is badness for all time, and goodness is goodness for all time? So there is no reply from Bradley's side. It is a concrete universal note. Let it be concrete universal, not an abstract universal created by thought. Let it be a concrete universal. But does it contain the same things on the same path? If goodness and badness is not goodness, there will be no difference in virtue and vice. No difference between crookedness and benevolence. No difference between love and hatred. There will be. And it is not in the scale of, there is a difference of kind and not of degree, Margaret. But Bradley is wrong in saying that there is a difference of degree only, but he could have accepted difference in kind. There is a difference of kind. One man is crooked from the beginning. One man is jealous about other man's prosperity, wealth, learning, everything. Another man cannot. So is there no difference of kind, you see? Difference of get more of water in it and less of it. It will be a difference of degree. But milk and wine, it is a difference of degree. It is a difference of kind. In Brahmapuri I am told that they have quota of, and in my time there will be chutney only. So is it a difference of degree or kind? It is a difference of kind, not of degree. Degree means from one to the other, you can go up to that, from one to that. A thermometer is a difference of degree, example of a difference of degree. But delirium, for example, and waking life, is it a difference of degree? Are we delirious? Or delirium or waking life is a difference of kind? Similarly, there is a difference of kind which Bradley has not taken notice of. His follower, Bosange, also falls in the same gutter, same ditch. He has not also failed. He speaks, no doubt, of personalism. That is one advance over Bradley. He speaks of individuality. He speaks of the value attached to individuals, you see. But what of the society? Where the individuals are good, will not the society be good? If you are speaking of the concrete whole, you should have ought to have spoken about the value of the society first, and then of the individuals. But his two books, Individuality and Value, they speak of the individuality only, for some. Let the individuals be good. Let them be surrendered to the whole. For example, of course, by way of analogy, I am not criticizing, I have no business to enter into another field, but suppose, in my practical life, our leaders, our political leaders are bad, and if they just have a composite picture, namely a concrete universal, then should we surrender unto them? I ask, should we surrender unto them? Surrender is the last word, individual value. The value comes to an individual if he surrenders to a higher individual, and etc., ultimately to the social whole. That social whole is more responsible. But should we? I once gave a lecture long ago, when I was a teacher in the Jesuit College, the university, that the justice in the court and the justice in the court of God, that is different, I say. Here you won't require evidence, and it is the evidence that will say whether it is this man is guilty or not, that man is guilty. But it is not so in a court of God, in the court of God. That justice is a different justice altogether. And it will be exemplified by the hunter who wanted to kill the Shane, you see. But a serpent bit, and then instead of that, he killed the Shane, and not that, something like that. Is it not? He killed. That hunter was wanted to kill the bird, and there was a Shane who was just waiting for to catch the bird. And the bird was in position. And below the hunter is the hunter, and above it is the Shane. Where should it go? And then it prayed to God. God then just made the trick that the hunter was bit by a snake. Naturally, the balance beam, and the arrow instead of hitting the chain, instead of hitting the, he only hit the chain, and that is the justice of Puja God. That is the divine justice, not this justice of which happens in the court of law. Apart from the fact of bribery and other things, which may influence a judge even. It's just possible. I am speaking of the possibility of this, not actuality. Otherwise, I may be handed over to the police for saying so. You see, that will be the defect. So, there is a possibility of being bribed. But there is no possibility of being bribed at all. So, Bhosangya also makes sandar only a lip service. It is not surrender at all. It is only a lip service of surrender. It is only a verbal picture of surrender. Bhosangya is not faithful to what he says. He is neither faithful to Bradley, nor faithful to what happens in this world. He has not studied the world and unnecessarily caused individuality and value to heirlooms in this world. Afterwards, Pringle Patterson comes and says the same thing in the same line, just see, that he is, what about? He just accentuates what Prasanthi has said and says that it is the individual that is immortal. Individual is immortal. He lives after also. He has a separate individuality of his own. Just as the seeds in the pomegranate has each of them a separate individuality of his own. But will the seed remain in its own sweetness if it is taken out of that concrete universal? No, it will not. It will soon be exhausted and withered away. Similarly, in a society, for example, he doesn't care for the society, Pringle Patterson. He cares for the individuals. But he forgets that individuals are individuals only in the society, and he doesn't care for that. And so he comes to a sort of personal immortality. Personal immortality is possible only on the background of impersonal immortality, which he forgets. The Pringle Patterson also, all these philosophers from Thales up to Pringle Patterson, they are one-sided and they have forgotten. They have made justice to one side, but just the opposite, injustice to the other side. They have not taken, and they have failed in a sense from, they should not pride, and we should, as students of philosophy, we should not forget to note the mistakes, not only the good points. I have told you the good points during the 5 years. I am telling you today the weak points of all these philosophers. And Royce, he says, individual of individuals. He is imagining God on the pattern of the individuals. The individuals are so meek and timid and cowardly and pygmies, and he is making the king among the pygmies. No doubt a lame calf, a lame cow, he is no doubt better than a calf, because she gives milk as yet. So a lame cow is better than a calf, but the lame cow may die and the calf will survive. So who knows? God may disappear from this world and the social service will remain over. This is exactly what is being done even now, that we are servants of each other. I received just a letter yesterday that he went on Monday, just on the previous day of my lectures. He didn't think of the importance of the lectures. He went home. Yes, all right, goodbye, may I say. And he went away. And now he has written to me yesterday a letter. I'm so sorry of missing the lecture. He knew everything. I started my lectures on Tuesday and he went on the night of Monday. You see. He went in. And now he writes to me, "Aur mere layak kuch seva ho to aap, yatha yogya seva ho to aap chitra pratishti." Now he is far away from me. Now I should write what? What should I write to him? "Yatha yogya seva." Why didn't you ask me here when you were here? "Yatha yogya seva, mere layak kuch seva." But this is a way of writing. This is only an instrument of deceiving others. I know it full well. I was deceived for some time, no doubt, while I came in 1947. But immediately I came to know that it is a way of the Marwadis to say, and I also say that way nowadays. Nowadays I have picked up the mannerism and say exactly in the same way. Because when this train started, when the guard has given this green signal, and when the train whistled, he said, "Mere layak kuch seva." When the train has started, now you are asking me, "Mere layak kuch seva?" What is this nonsense? I could not say. You stop the train and then I shall tell you what you should do. This is what I have seen. I am not telling you by imagination. This is what I have seen on this very station. My own students came to me. our life, upcoming life, Krishna. And when the strain is moving down, what are you asking me now? At this stage, immediately, Roy speaks of this also, and he too is speaking. So, from theories onwards, these 24 philosophers have failed in one way or the other. So, on the background of this failure, let me now make a start to the Indian philosophy. And I think there are 5 or 10 minutes more, as I said, and not more than, I shall not detain you more than 10 minutes, but I am aware, but something here or there, but I am aware of the time also. Because I have done that business for 35 years, and I know the time. Inside my heart there is a time going on, and outside the lecture is going on, you see. So that I am aware more of time than of the lecture. So that is the thing. I know that there are 10 minutes more. So now I shall come to the Indian philosophy. I don't mean, beware, that I do not want to suggest that Indian philosophy has not made mistakes. Innumerable mistakes have been made. And there is more likelihood of Indians making more mistakes because at least there was good point in this, from there was one thread. And in Western philosophy you find one philosophy, you see, getting out of another philosophy. There is a genetic method also. Genetically, that is one man producing another man, producing a third man, and a fourth man. Man, it requires a man to beget. But this is not so in Indian philosophy. There are different camps. And there are camps, that is, the doors are shut. Nobody is allowed to shut. One Gurukul, another Gurukul, third Gurukul, a third university, a Shanti Niketan there. If you have no communication between one and the other, what will I do? You do not know what you do. So that will be the fundamental defect of Indian philosophy. So Indian philosophers also are in the wrong. And that I shall point afterwards. First afterwards, I shall point out the good points of these philosophers. And then, as I just pointed out, I shall point out, not fail, whatever you may say, whatever you may think about yourself, philosophy is not meant for taking out. You must philosophize. You must learn to philosophize for yourself. Don't take everything what I tell as truth. Doubt it. And you think for yourself, and you have your own philosophy. That is what my teacher told me, that you should have, you should think for yourself. And this is what I am pointing out, the mistakes in my own thinking, you see. That if I mention the number of mistakes, number of contradictions which Aristotle said, you will have no respect for Aristotle in his philosophy. But I may mention only of one or two. Two. A number of mistakes which Aristotle has committed. Similarly, I shall tell, no doubt, from Indian philosophy, but after all, there will be lampposts, not lighthouses as yet. I have not finished. Dr. Mohanlal has said that I have finished that. No, it is not so. Till I finish the Indian philosophers and the systems, which are watertight compartments. They don't see face to face even. These philosophers have the courage to look back. We have no courage to look back. And what our predecessors have done. And no, we have not talked with each other. Contemporaries also we have neglected. And we have learned only through their books and through the books. That's all. There is one point which I can say, so far as these lectures are concerned, that is, the Western philosophers from theory have insisted upon the preservation of the self. And Indian saints and systems will talk of the annihilation, of the destruction of the self. If you keep this in mind, you will understand how the Indian philosophers are there. The self is to be rooted out. And there will be no trace of the self. Then what will it? The society alone. You see, the political organized system alone. And above all, the church. And above all, God. That will be the manner in which Indian philosophers and Indian systems will speak. From beginning to end, you will find the axe is at the roots of the self. It was the preservation. The watering of the self. The self was preserved at all costs. And not minding the social whole, the self to be preserved. And here the self is to be destroyed. If you remember that fundamental fact, great fact, so far as these lectures are concerned, and then about God. The spiritual progress, you see, there is with reference to the preservation of the self. And the spiritual progress here is with the destruction of the self. That is the fundamental difference between the Western philosophy and the Eastern philosophy, the Indian philosophy is God. I shall take one day, first begin, and then tomorrow we shall finish. Let us take the systems first, and then the philosophers afterwards, and then pass on, insensibly, into the sages and the saints. The first is the Nyaya-Vaisheshika philosophy. The Nyaya-Vaisheshika philosophy, for the sake of, convenience, as just as Hiranyaka has done, Nyaya-Vaisheshika, the Sankhya Yoga, and the Mimamsa, the Purva Mimamsa, and the Uttar Mimamsa. In the Sankhya Vaisheshika, something has been borrowed from Sankhya, but Nyayas and Nayayikas are borrowed from the Vaisheshikas, and the Vaisheshikas are borrowed from the Nayayikas. The Vaisheshikas are borrowed this. The logic of the Nayayikas, and the Nayayikas have borrowed the categories of the Vaisheshikas. So they have made a single system of their own, Nyaya Vaisheshika. According to Nyaya Vaisheshika, there are seven padarthas, that is seven categories. What are they? Dravya guna samanya samavaya vishesha bhavaha. There are sapta padarthas, seven categories, seven pigeon holes, you see. Each pigeon into one. Dravya, guna, karma, samanya, vishesha. In that seven ways, we can think of the world. And in just a little detail, you see. And the dravya has been considered as nine in number. Prithvi, aptai, vayu, akash, man, buddhi, akash, chitana, akash. So they are nine. Whatever it is, we need not have any more trouble about these nine varieties of dravya. We may consider as, for convenience sake, as dravya, substance. If we start with substance, then what are the others? Guna, karma, samanya, samavaya, vishesha and abhava, what are they? They will be no better than adjectives. No better than what are known as the modes. Just as Spinoza speaks of the modes, similarly, they will be the different ways of the manifestation of the substance. A substance, for example, there is a man, Mr. X. Then Mr. X has certain attributes, gunas. He has got certain karma. He does something, gardening, playing cards, and eating bhang. He does that work. Then there will be a guna, samanya. He is a man, belonging to the species of man. There is that manushyatva upon his head. He belongs to that, samanya. Now, I am not discussing the great struggles which arose. You see, warfare, where that samanya universal is there or not, on each cow, gotva. The cowness, for example, whether it is cowness is something, 10 cows are there, and the cowness is the 11th, or the cowness is distributed over all of them. Every cow has cowness in it or not? Yes, you will say, every cow has cowness. Every cow has cowness. Then if the cowness is distributed in so many distinctions and hair-splitting arguments, I don't wish to enter into that because I am not a teacher of your curriculum. I only want to speak about the thread, spiritual thread, if there is any. And if dravya is taken out, then where will these be? Guna, karma, whose karma? Whose gunas? You see, who's samanya? Where do they inhere? Where are they inherent in samavaya and abhava? What are we talking about? These are the different modes or the manifestations or the ways of revelation of that single substance. If that substance goes away, then they are dropped down. If the thread is taken out, then the beads drop down on the ground. Similarly, these several things will drop down on the ground if they're done. And what about that dravya then? We may define as Gandhavati Prithvi, that Gandha belongs to Prithvi. But if the Prithvi goes away, where will that be Gandha? We don't know at all. So that is the drawback. That is, we do not know. If you ask a Sankhya Vaisheshika, which is real, whether the Dravya is real or these things are real, he will not have a reply. Whether the adjective is more important or the substance is more important, he will not have a reply. But he will say that these are the seven categories and these are different things, the nine dravyas and so on. He will give a lecture upon that. But if substance is taken out, then what will be the fate of all these things? They will drop down to the ground. Then comes the Sankhya way, the Sankhya Yoga, you say. And here, I just mentioned it when I'm near 2 minutes more, you say, Sankhya Yoga. The Sankhya is correct. Sankhya also says when? Prakriti and Purusha. Va vimam purushau loke kshadakshakshadevaja. Prakritim purushan jaiva vidyanadi uvavapi prakriti and purusha. You get these verses from the Bhagavad Gita. That prakriti and purusha, they are the two things in this world. You start with the two things. Prakritim purushan vidyanadav vidyanadi uvavapau. Both are eternal, beginningless. If both are eternal, beginningless, then what has Sankhya to do say, or what has Yoga to say? And you will find different answers from these different schools of Sankhya and Yoga. And then going to Mimamsa altogether, you again fall in a ditch, and it will be just as in whom, with all skepticism. Even so, you will find in the Mimamsa. And then afterwards, the Vedanta will take up courage and say that there is something which is real. We shall pass on next time. Thank you.